Hello, everybody, and welcome to Uncork the Sun with the Vinstitute Wine School. I'm your host, Moshe Kogel, but I don't suppose I even need to give you my last name, because who else are you going to confuse me with? I want to start today's episode by asking you a question. More like giving you a task, a test. I want you to close your eyes, unless you're driving, keep those eyes open, and I want you to visualize the most iconic symbol of wine and winemaking. Okay, so maybe you thought about a cluster of grapes or a grapevine. Maybe you thought about a bottle of wine. Maybe you thought about a glass. These are all fine, but they're not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the other thing, the fourth thing, or maybe it was the first thing you thought of. Certainly, if you read the title of this episode, then this whole activity was for nothing because you were already thinking about it. The wine barrel, a solid oak 225-liter wine barrel, also called a barrique. The image of the barrel has become totally synonymous with the concept of wine. The use of oak is one of the longest-standing traditions in winemaking, and it's something that has persisted into the modern age for very good reasons. But why? Why do winemakers use oak? How do we use oak? And how can you, as a consumer, identify oak in a wine that you're drinking? These are some of the questions that we are going to answer today on episode 3 of Uncork the Sun! Did you like that? I haven't really figured out an intro format yet. I'm still testing things out. I think that was a little overdramatic. I do want to thank everybody for listening to the show. We've had still a fantastic response from the first 2 weeks. Tons of questions coming in, lots of feedback. And importantly, I am learning things from every episode that I record. Not things about wine. I mean, I already know those things. But things about how to put together a functional podcast. From episode 2, in retrospect, I have learned not to mumble for 20 minutes straight. And from episode 1 before that, I learned not to leave 5 minutes of empty audio at the end of every episode. Isn't this great? You can just watch me develop. Or listen, I guess. But on to the topic at hand. Oak wine barrels. First of all, first question, it's something that I get asked a lot. Are all wine barrels made of oak? And the answer is basically yes. Functionally, yes. But literally, no. More than 99% of barrels that are going to be used in wine production are going to be oak of various different kinds. But every now and then, you get people that experiment with other different types of wood. Some wineries have made use of things like acacia wood. Shout out to the only winery on Quadra Island, South End Farms, for using some acacia wood in their production. But generally speaking, barrels is oak. And there's a reason for that. A couple reasons, I suppose. One is that oak is good hard wood. When you are soaking wine inside a barrel, you want to have wood that isn't going to absorb it too fast. Soft wood is going to wear out too quickly and probably give way too much flavor in a short period of time. So oak is well suited to the life cycle of a barrel, but it's also a product that grows naturally in France, which is where this whole oak thing began. Although it isn't necessarily where the whole oak thing has ended. There are now two, maybe 2.5, countries that are well known for their oak production. You can get French oak, American oak, and the pretty distant third place, but still first runner-up, would be Hungarian oak. As far as the differences between these different nationalities of oak go, you have a little bit down to genetics. In France and in America, they are using different strains of oak trees that obviously have different traits. But some of it's also down to manufacture. A person who builds and works on oak barrels is called a cooper, and they operate a business called a cooperage. And French coopers are very proud of the fact that they hand chisel all of their wood to create their barrel staves. American coopers equally boast the idea that they saw their oak staves. And the creation of barrels is such a delicate thing that chiseling the wood compared to sawing it is actually perceived to have a pretty substantial difference. And it has to do with toasting. Toasting is something that happens to every barrel when it's being produced. The inside of the wood is charred to some degree, And that imparts some of the characteristic toastiness that will eventually be infused into whatever wine it comes in contact with. But there's a real difference between a lightly toasted barrel, a medium toast plus, or a heavy toast. And these subtleties go all the way back to how the pieces of wood are cut up. By chiseling, the French coopers avoid creating too much friction, whereas the American coopers embrace it by sawing, creating friction that effectively toasts the inside corners of every stave that they make. These pre-toasted barrels are then typically toasted more heavily in America than they are in France, and American coopers will often do toasted heads as well, the head being the round part on the end of the barrel. French coopers will often leave the head untoasted, whereas Americans will often toast it. So in addition to starting with genetically different trees, the two different nations also treat their wood quite differently, which gets a substantially different impact. French oak is known to offer a much more subtle affectation to the wines that it is used with. It is gentler, it is softer, and it tends to be more integrated into the natural flavors of the wine grapes themselves. Whereas American oak is known for being more aggressively flavorful. The impact of American oak is much more obvious and more transparent. It tends to be toastier, it tends to be sweeter, and a wine that is fully produced using American oak is pretty obvious. But a way that many winemakers tread the spectrum between French and American oak is by using both. It's not uncommon to see a wine produced using, say, 80% or 90% French oak, and then just that little dash of American oak to give a little intensity to the wine. In fact, barrel selection is one of the most valuable tools that a winemaker can use to shape a wine. You never just buy a bunch of identical barrels from the same producer, put all of your wine inside it, and then at the end, mix it all together and call that a day. No. Instead, you buy barrels from a dozen different producers. You buy French oak, you buy American oak, maybe you buy a bit of Hungarian oak. I forgot to mention the Hungarian before, but if you're curious about it, it tends to be a little more intense than French, but a little less intense than American. So a good midpoint, and there's a handful of winemakers that enjoy using it because of that level of moderation. But anyways, you buy different barrels, and you divide your wine between them. If you have 2,000 liters of Syrah, and you split it between 20 different barrels, every one of those barrels is going to be distinct. This is organic material, just like corks. And that means that no two barrels will be carbon copies of each other. You will see infinite variability. And some of these things we can control by specifically buying barrels with a certain tightness of grain in the wood. Tight grain wood versus coarse grain wood is going to give different levels of exposure of the flavors of oak to the wine. Or we can specify different levels of toasting. But oftentimes we'll try many different types of barrels. And then after, oh, let's say 10 months at least, maybe a year and a half, we'll go in and we'll taste each one of those 20 barrels. And the wine that was all the exact same Syrah when it went into the barrels comes out on the other side completely changed, and all 20 of those barrels will taste different. This is where a winemaker really gets to show their skill and their discretion, because they will taste through the 20 different wines, and they'll decide exactly which ones should be blended together to create their finished Syrah. What happens to the rest of the barrels that don't make the cut? Well, they still turn into wine, but they turn into a different wine. Maybe they get added to a generic red blend that that winery has. Or maybe they go into a different Syrah at a different price point. I really can't explain how useful it is to have a siphon wine. It's almost necessary in order to make truly high-quality product, because you need to be able to say no to a few of the barrels. When you think about it in a different context, a restaurant is not going to use every morsel of food that comes into their kitchen. They're going to select the finest pieces to present, whether it's the nicest cuts of meat or whether it's the greenest, crispest pieces of lettuce. And whatever remains, the food that is fine but maybe not as attractive, is probably going to wind up thrown into a stew somewhere down the line. But now we're talking about quality, and that means that I need to address a very big question. Does putting wine into an oak barrel make it better? The answer, unfortunately, is a bit of a cop-out, because the answer is no. Doing anything to a wine does not necessarily make it better. It just makes it different. Some people like nothing but the taste of oak, and some people cannot stand it. There is no one way to make wine that is going to suit everybody's palates, and so both oaked and unoaked wines have validity and merit. But there are some things about the use of oak that can give it a perception of quality. The first thing is a tradition. Wine is irrevocably rooted in tradition. You have things like champagne making that have actually been granted UNESCO heritage status. And the use of oak in making a wine, like I've already said earlier in this episode, is a cemented part of winemaking tradition. And the idea that the old ways are the best ways are always going to keep drawing people back to the idea that oak makes the finest wines. Now, the second reason why oak can lend value to a wine is because of its ability to reinforce the longevity of a wine. If you haven't yet listened to episode 1 of this podcast where I talk about cellaring potential, then shame on you. You should pause episode 3 right now, go back, listen to episode 1, I'll wait, and then you can return here and we'll keep talking. We good? Welcome back. My name's Moshe Kogel, I'm your host. As we all know now from episode 1, tannin is a very important element that allows wine to age over time by breaking down, effectively creating a shield between the oxygen and the natural fruit of the wine. Tannin comes from the skins of grapes, but it also comes from oak barrels. As an almost universal rule, if you make the same wine with and without oak, the oaked version will last longer. And that potential for age is something that's extremely important to wine collectors. The final reason why it can be perceived that oak makes a higher quality wine is actually just because of the cost. Oak is expensive. You're easily looking at paying $1,000 or more for a single brand new oak barrel. And if it's French oak, it's more like $1,500. And I do mean at least. You might say, but Moss, everything is expensive when you're starting a winery. The land is expensive, the building is expensive, the stainless steel tanks that you use to ferment are expensive. But the cost of those capital expenses is amortized over many, many, many years, decades perhaps. Whereas an oak barrel, in consistent use, lasts about 5 or 6 years. During that time, the wine is soaking into the grain of the wood. It's softening the impact of the oak. And after about half a decade, the natural flavor of the wood has been reduced so much that we deem it neutral. Neutral oak barrels, that's a term that we use to describe an oak barrel that has been used until it's not really tasting like oak anymore. Now, you can keep using a neutral oak barrel after that point. Certainly you can. But it doesn't have the same taste. So wineries need to be refreshing their supply of wood every single year, which makes oak very expensive. And so the wines that you make in oak barrels are also more expensive. They have to be just to pay off the wood. Not to mention the time they have to sit in the wood, which is time that you're not selling that wine. It all adds up to a more expensive price point, which you might think would put some people off. People like inexpensive things, right? Sometimes. Kind of. When it comes to wine, though, wine falls in the category of what's called a Veblen good. I think that's spelled V-E-B-L-I-N, I think. Anyways, a Veblen good is a rare and very specific type of commodity that actually goes up in demand as the price goes up. The examples they use are things like designer handbags. The more expensive, the more prestigious it is to have, and therefore the more demand. Well, once you get wine past a certain price point, if it costs more to make the bottle and it costs more to buy the bottle from the winery, it actually becomes a lot more enticing. And oak is a necessary tool to get a wine up to that sweet spot price point, where it starts to look, you know, real fancy. Now the last thing I want to touch on today is what you actually get from using oak barrels to make a wine. What does the winemaker get behind the scenes, and what does the consumer get? Well, the first thing is tannin, which we've already discussed. Tannin is important for extending the longevity of a wine when it's in the bottle, but it also adds texture. An oaked wine tends to be richer, more full-bodied, and rounder in the mouth. You can compare it to milk and the difference between drinking skim milk and whole milk. There's a really tangible difference, isn't there? Oak can do that to a wine. It can take it from skim milk and it can bring it up to 1%, 2% homogenized. It can take it to whipping cream if you want it to. And it's all because of the tannin that you get from the oak. Now, in terms of perception as a consumer, when you're drinking a wine, you can recognize the impact of oak by looking for that texture, that fullness. But there can also be a sort of a different feeling to the tannin than grape tannins coming from the grape skins. Grape tannins tend to be a little gentler, a little more velvety, and oak tannin tends to be a bit drier, a bit grittier almost. It's a subtle thing that you have to train your palate to recognize, but once you have it, you will notice it. The second thing we get by using oak barrels ties right into the first thing. The second thing is oxygen. And why do we want oxygen in our wine? We want it because we also have tannin in there. You see, tannin in its raw state is grippy, it's harsh, it is rough, but oxygen breaks it down. And when the tannin breaks down, that's when it starts to turn really soft, really smooth, and really enticing. So if, let's say, you put your wine into a big stainless steel tank, sealed it up hermetically so that it wasn't getting air, and then added in powdered tannin, you could enhance the tannin of the wine, yes. You could do step one, all in a laboratory without ever having to buy an oak barrel. But if you bottled that wine and drank it, it would be rough. Oak barrels are porous. They allow air to get in, to get out. And that means that even as the oak barrel is giving tannin to the wine, it's also allowing oxygen in to attack that tannin and break it down and reintegrate it into the wine as something softer and smoother that's building mid-palate texture without too much of that grittiness. It's a fine balance that takes winemakers a long time to perfect. Exactly how long to leave your wine inside a barrel to allow it to enhance texture without getting an overabundance of tannin or without getting an overabundance of oxygen. Now, the third thing that you get from an oak barrel is the most important thing because it's what makes some people love oaked wines and others hate oaked wines. And it is, of course, the taste. It's the actual flavor of the wood. And it's why we have to keep on buying barrels every 5 years, because the tannin and the oxygen, they will keep coming from aged, neutral oak barrels. But the flavor is what dies out, and the flavor is really important for certain wines. So what does oak taste like then? Surprisingly, it doesn't really just taste like wood. And if you try a wine that does actually just taste like wood, that's probably a combination of very young oak barrels giving very fresh, intense flavors, maybe it's American oak, and probably not enough time or age, not enough oxygen, to burn off that dry, grippy tannin. A wine is not supposed to taste like chewing on a plank of cedar. No, the more common and more friendly flavors that you can get from oak barrels are things like baking spice, cinnamon, nutmeg, clove. Think about it, it's all the woody spices. That kind of makes sense, right? You can also get sweetness. I mentioned before that every oak barrel is toasted, and when that toasting happens, it caramelizes the fibers in the wood and releases a sweetness that can be really palpable in certain wines. The sweetness often combines with the other category of flavors you get from oak, which is toastiness. When you mix the toasted flavor with the natural sweetness, you get things like toffee, caramel, creme brulee, vanilla and butterscotch, sometimes tones of cocoa or dry cocoa powder. These are, you have to admit, very attractive flavors. Everybody likes these things. But, admittedly, it's very possible to overdo them in a wine. If you want a wine for its savory or its refreshing nature, then trying something that tastes like a Werther's Original is probably not what you signed up for. But when you merge the toastiness, the smokiness, with a little hint of that sweetness and a bit of that aromatic baking spice, and you blend them in just such a way that you're still getting the natural fruit characteristics from the grapes, but melting them together like baking an apple pie. I mean, there's just not much better than that. Now, the last thing that you get from using oak in a wine is just style. It's reputation, it's prestige, it's perception, it's brand image. Everything that I mentioned before, you can actually get through different sources. I already said that you can use dried tannin powder, to add to your wines. It's a bit of a cheater move, but you can do it. Oxygen, you can get that by using open-top vessels. You can use concrete vessels that do micro-oxidization using all the tiny little pores that they have. Or you can buy very expensive micro-ox machines that pump bubbles into your wine to oxidize them. As for the flavor, you can just take a bunch of oak chips or oak cubes and toss them into a stainless steel vat of wine, let them sit there for a while, and by the time that you strain them back out, the wine tastes like oak. But none of that really replaces that iconic image that we started the episode with, the picture of the barrel itself. The oak barrel is the symbol of the winery, and when it comes right down to it, nobody wants to do a cellar tour to look at your fancy collection of plastic carboys. Thank you all for listening to Uncork the Sun today with me. I hope you learned a little bit about oak, about why we use it, and also how you can perceive it in wines. It is, like so many things in wine appreciation, something you just have to look for. And once you look for it, you'll start noticing it. And then you can practice and train your palate until eventually you'll be picking it up in wines without even trying to. Before I finish, I want to say thank you to Ryan and Rod from the podcast Dork Uncorked. They had me on their show earlier this week, and we talked about the way that COVID-19 has affected wineries in British Columbia, and generally just chatted about wine. They're fun guys, it's a fun show, and if you were interested enough to listen to this entire episode, you're probably going to be interested in their stuff too. It airs on CFAX 1070 in the Victoria area, British Columbia of course, on Sundays at noon. You can also download it as a podcast. Just look for Dork Uncorked. I am, as always, speaking about these topics from the perspective of somebody who works in the wine industry in the South Okanagan, specifically in the towns of Oliver and Osoyoos. To learn more about the wineries of Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country, your place to go is www.oliverosoyoos.com. If you visit the Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country Facebook page, you'll be able to catch my next virtual Vinstitute broadcast on May 26th at 7:00 p.m. That'll be streamed on Facebook Live, and if you miss the live session, you'll be able to see the recording on there afterwards and also on the Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country YouTube channel. The topic for the May 26th live stream is going to be rosé wines, which is going to give me a great platform to talk about some very nerdy aspects of wine production. To post about this show or the live tastings, please use the hashtag UncorkTheSun. This podcast is released every second week, so we hope that you'll keep listening for the next episode where I'm planning to talk about grapevines or something. I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. If you have any questions about the show, about wine or winemaking or wine appreciation, please always feel free to email me at moss@vinstitute.ca. This podcast is a collaboration between Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country and the Vinstitute Wine School. The music for this episode was provided by Olav. To hear more of his work, visit olav.bandcamp.com. The host has been me, Moss Schokogel, and if I had to choose a type of wine barrel to represent my personality, I would choose neutral. Whether you're experiencing the beauty of Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country from the comfort of your own home, or whether you're planning a trip here for the future, we can't wait to raise a glass with you and uncork the sun together.